think about the way the world is and the way that the world could be.
All of our systems are interrelated and interdependent.
There's 1,000 different voices that nobody hears.
We're looking at a human being, and there's life story.
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 Story. Story. Story. Story.
Connection to the people we don't know that live near us.
An Elevated Denver starts now.
Welcome back to the Elevated Denver podcast, where we shine a light on stories and solutions shaping the future of homelessness in our city. After 30 episodes and 2 powerful seasons, we took a short pause to focus on another side of our work, our collaboratories, where community members, service providers, and leaders come together to co-design real solutions. Now we're back with something special, a 2-episode series featuring the Denver Basic Income Project. We'll explore what basic income really means, how it's being tested here in Denver, and why it could change the way we think about poverty, stability, and opportunity in America.
Let's jump back into our conversation with Gwen Battis, Program Manager of the Denver Basic Income Project. In our last episode, we talked about how AI is reshaping the workforce and the economy. In this episode, we'll explore what that means for our collective future and why it's time to rethink what basic income really represents. The Denver Basic Income Project's upcoming documentary takes these ideas even further, inviting us to imagine a world where everyone's basic needs are met and where support isn't a privilege, but a shared foundation for all. Back to the interview with Gwen.
Basic income as a concept is not new. It was championed in the civil rights movement and echoed during the pandemic cash transfers. Why does that history matter?
I think the historical context is incredibly important. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. thought that racial equity was one of the most lucrative pathways to achieving that was through a guaranteed income. I think that speaks for itself. I think having cash, the most tangible and powerful currency and form of agency in our society, is what really takes people to the next level. And you're able to provide for yourself opportunities that you wouldn't get otherwise. So I think the historical context is really important, especially when we look at the stimulus checks during COVID. Something a lot of people in our movement talk about is child tax credit as well. Tax credits is a form of direct cash. All these kind of like cash related policies are really important to continue moving forward. The expanded child tax credit under Biden alone, it cut child poverty in half. And we didn't continue it. So there's this bedrock of knowledge that we're continuing to build upon. And the question is, why aren't we just doing this for everybody? There's so much evidence that people have better mental health outcomes. People have better education and employment and housing outcomes. There's great strides happening. It all does connect back to that original idea. When people fall on hard times, when people are systemically discriminated against, how do we choose to battle that inequity? How are we going to face that? And I think basic income is a proven tool to face it.
The theme is that we historically and presently have so much evidence that this really works for all the reasons you've described. And at this point, what it's going to take is all of us looking at ourselves and saying, what kind of nation and society do we want to be a part of? Do we want to be a part of one that supports residents and community, or do we want to continue the path that we're on that is only putting more and more people in poverty and despair? That's something that we are going to have to reckon with sooner than later, I think. So talk to us about how your project here in Denver fits into the growing national conversation.
So the Denver Basic Income Project, we are the first and the largest project of its kind to study the impact of guaranteed income on folks experiencing homelessness. So what that means is, up until this point, there hasn't been a pilot or an organization that studied when you give direct cash to people experiencing homelessness at this scale. And that's really important for a number of reasons. There's this growing movement, this group called the Guaranteed Income Community of Practice, that are building a lot of momentum nationally. That is like how do we gather all the evidence that we've accumulated, all of our partners and the varying levels of influence we have, and how do we get this to policy on a larger scale? How do we see cash show up in more permanent ways? And I think DBIP is uniquely positioned to make those arguments. We have incredibly dedicated and inspired participants who are now joining a first of its kind union of pilot participants, where folks are all coming together and creating a group by and for pilot participants to decide what are our policy priorities, what stories are the most impactful to share, and doing advocacy training and speaking with legislators. It's intangible how electric I feel like the moment is right now for folks. On the state level, there's a group that we're a part of called the Cash for Coloradans Coalition that came to be about like a year and a half ago. We're looking at tax policy. We're looking at pilot data. We're looking at what's happening and what is the best pathway forward. So because of the scale of our pilot and the results that we've had, and also having over 800 pilot participants, many of whom are still engaged with us and wanting to move forward and do the union work, advocacy work, share their story, speak with city council, I think in connection to the national landscape, we're like kind of a force to be reckoned with. We're not giving out cash anymore, but we're nowhere near done with the work that lies ahead, especially with what we know is coming down the pipeline. We did some exploratory work this past year on what it would look like to do a Colorado cash dividend from some sort of fund that existed outside of the government. There's a lot of things in process and things in motion, and I'm really proud of the work that we've achieved thus far, but we're still looking to get more cash out to people. So we're still fundraising, keep the momentum moving forward, and hopefully be able to bring another pilot to Colorado soon.
How would you respond to critics who say direct cash pilots weren't successful or successful enough to move to policy?
I think a lot of criticisms of pilots in the guaranteed income space look at one definition of success, whether it be improved mental health or improved ability to pay your rent or like housing, the one metric. And if we don't reach that metric that the folks themselves didn't determine, the researchers or the program administrators determined, then we deem it unsuccessful. And I think that moves so far away from the actual point and the best part about direct cash as an intervention and a tool is that cash works because it gives people choice. It gives people agency and flexibility. So what one person might use the cash to pay their rent, another might use it to pay for their kids' after school programs or take the first vacation they've had in years. Whatever works for them and whatever meets their needs in the moment, that's what this is all about. It's one of the strongest tools we have to give families the freedom to shape the future that they want. It lets them decide what's most important for them. And that's really dignity. Another piece that I like to point out is this paternalism of how we view people in poverty. And there's a double standard there of how they make their choices and kind of the lens in which we view and analyze their choices and those of people with more wealth or even middle class. So for instance, there's an example I like to use in which it's encouraged to say if you're in your mid to late 20s, or even in your early 20s, beginning adulthood, to take a gap year and stop working and give yourself the time if you have the financial means to figure yourself out. I don't think we give the same grace to people in poverty. It's pretty much you need to work, you need to spend money on the things that we've already determined you need to spend money on, your basic needs, and anything else is null, it's fringe. And yet we glorify taking extra time, doing things for your mental health, doing things that bring you joy, and that's not afforded to people in poverty. So I think there's a lot of growth that needs to happen there as a society where we need to kind of check our biases at the door and really look at this with a lens of like, if I had $1,000 and you had $1,000, we would spend it on different things. I think that's just a fact. And therefore, the outcomes measured are not going to be exactly the same. That doesn't mean that it didn't have impact. That doesn't mean that it didn't change someone's life. And that doesn't mean it's not a worthy solution or intervention of poverty.
Is there anything that you would like to illuminate now that you want to make sure people know about what really worked or any of your findings from the pilot?
I think something that I would be remiss not to point out is the kind of analytical lens in which we look at guaranteed income or basic income pilots. It also is not really zooming out and looking at the full picture. I think the data that's cherry-picked and used in kind of our opposition doesn't really look at what was the environment in which the direct cash was administered, what was the time period. A lot of these studies happened during COVID or right after COVID in a very high inflation economy. For instance, with DBIP, it started in 2022, and yet there's other elements of our program that I think are kind of left in the dust when talking about, you know, why did Group C do so well or why didn't this group do as well as the others? There's environmental factors at play. There's also things beyond cash that help people. We gave folks a phone. We still pay for phones for participants, actually, with full talk text data, which was a huge elimination of a barrier in navigating homelessness. They also were connected to a community-based partner agency, so they're connected to services. So they were prone, I think, to more success than a non-participant, even though they only received $50 a month, talking about Group C. So I think on top of just kind of like checking our own biases and expectations and asking, like, who are we to say what improved well-being looks like for one person versus the other, I do think also taking kind of like a researcher's lens of saying what actually is happening in this trial and this data that's being reported, where was this happening? Was the amount of money like sufficient enough to really make the change that people were hoping for? Because I think that's another element. As cost of living and inflation only increases, you know, people need a lot more money than you'd realize. So yeah, I felt like that was also important to add, that there's lots of elements that go into this, like giving somebody money in their normal day-to-day life. Like, it doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? There's so many environmental factors that impact outcomes. And it's all self-reported, right? So like what one person feels is stressful may be a very different level of stress than another person. And so it's all kind of subjective. I think we really have to shine a light and place more importance on the stories and the qualitative data of what people are actually telling you it did for them, and like believe them when they tell you.
One thing I say a lot is you can use data to reinforce belief structures. Data itself is not objective. And as you and I both strongly believe, the voice of the lived experts are the ones that we need to be listening to. And that will illuminate for us what really works and what doesn't. And a part of that is, as you said, none of this happens in a vacuum. People's lives are very complex. And going back to something at the beginning of our conversation, I think about that control group and what it might have felt like for someone just to care enough to include them and to give them something and to say, we believe in you. We can't measure that very easily.
No.
But it matters.
We're going to take a short break to tell you about a special event this December that you can be a part of. On December 21st, Colorado Coalition for the Homeless will be hosting their annual vigil to support all lives lost to homelessness this year. For the first time ever, the Memorial Blanket Project will be here, displaying blankets we all make for our unhoused neighbors, just like a local Girl Scout troop.
My whole Girl Scout troop is designing squares
so that a family can have a blanket this winter.
We're going to give them the blanket so they can stay warm during the winter.
And what are you doing on your blanket square?
I'm putting some turtles, a smiley face, a frog, and a flower to like just make bright colors to make people happy.
And why is it important to help people?
Because if they don't have a home, then it can be hard to live and they can kind of suffer. So we're helping them so it's easier to live.
And think about this. How would you feel if you were out there all winter without anything warm?
We need more blankets. So if you've ever thought about sewing, knitting, crocheting, or even tying a blanket, we need you. Check out our website to learn more about the blanket sizes, where you can bring them, and any other questions you have. elevateddenver.co like Colorado. Join us in keeping our neighbors warm this winter. Now back to the episode. Something you've touched on already, but let's just spend another minute on, is some people fear that basic income will threaten our economy or work ethic. How would you answer those concerns?
I think there's validity in the thought of what does it mean for our economy if we're given money without work, especially considering our economy is built on labor. And with artificial intelligence, that's quickly changing. So I think there's a lot of question marks right now of what is this future economy going to look like? Is it going to be a post-labor economy in which AI can do every single job? But then how do we engage in the economy? How do we have spending money? How do we afford things? If AI is taking all those jobs, who is looking out for all the folks who are getting displaced? They're losing all these jobs, and it's already happening. So my response there would be, basic income, I think, is going to be absolutely necessary in the economy of the future. And what's happening with the consolidation of power, greater consolidation of wealth, people still need to have money to afford their basic needs. And if they're losing their jobs because AI can do the job better, faster, for less money, safer, you name it, we need to have a plan, right, for people who are losing work at this level and at this scale. And right now we don't. In the larger movement right now, there's a slogan that we say, no AI without UBI. These things are taking shape and unrolling. And I think the idea is just you wait. This is going to build such an abundant society where no one's going to have to work. We're going to have all this time to pursue our creative ideas. And when has that ever really been true, when it doesn't just benefit the top 1%? And I don't think it's going to be any different in this case. So I think in terms of the work ethic piece, I think work ethic is in all of us. I think most people just need money, access, opportunity, connections, networks to be able to get the work that they can actually to provide for their family. But that work, I think, is in jeopardy right now with what's coming. So we're in a really precarious spot. And I think basic income has to be a part of that solution.
This is an important part of the conversation. The rise of AI and its ripple effects on jobs, the economy, and what stability looks like in our communities. You will hear more about this in DBIP's upcoming documentary. In addition, you'll hear from founder Mark Donovan about the challenges of running a direct cash program right now, despite the growing need and clear impact. Here's part of his narrative.
I think the biggest challenge is just shifting people's views on folks that are experiencing homelessness and convincing them that this is a really powerful and impactful investment. I know most people really care and they want to make things better and they want to have impact and use what resources they do have to have impact. But this idea of just giving people cash unconditionally is hard for many people to accept, that not only does it really have a great and immediate impact, but also that it can be much more cost effective than other things that we're doing. And so telling that story in a way that it resonates and getting people to take action and get involved, it's probably been the most challenging piece of this. So much of our social safety net is built with all kinds of hoops that people need to jump through, and also a lot of stigma. And it's just fundamentally different to say to people, we trust you and we believe you. It's easy to say, but then to hand over actual cash without any strings attached to it, that sinks in really quickly. And it's also empowering, because for many of the people that we have worked with, it's the first time in a long time that they've really been treated in that way and trusted to do what they know they need to do at this moment. And it's not always a direct path to stability. It's not always a direct path to housing. But by getting on that pathway and feeling like the future can be better than the past, it's really important. And we've seen people that were only receiving $50 and a phone have dramatic transformations. but the people also receiving $1,000 or even the lump sum $6,500 were able to make some big changes, whether it was buying an RV or paying down debt or just doing whatever was needed to make that next step. Getting on that right path can be a matter of life and death, and it's really important and impactful.
Before we get back to Gwen, it's worth pausing on the impact the Denver Basic Income Project has had on participants' lives. You can read about it in their reports, and soon you'll see it in their documentary. One of those stories is from Charlie, a participant we interviewed in 2023 who shared how the project has changed her life.
I think it's truly a positive and powerful thing that you guys are doing and creating for low-income and homeless families. I think it's beautiful, and I think it is one of the many blessings that this world needs right now. Just that small act of kindness, I think, always just goes a long way. Even if it doesn't get me far, it's needed, it's wanted, and it's so appreciated.
So what can people do who are listening to this and are activated by what you're talking about? What actions can we all take to be a part of this movement?
I would say first, you can go to our website and sign up for our newsletter. No matter what time of year it is, your city council person, your legislators, like, they work for you. As a constituent, if you think basic income is something that could be expanded to more people in Colorado and you think it's important, then you need to let your legislators know. We have some resources to be able to do that easily. And beyond that, something that is actually incredibly important is have conversations with people. If you see the film, or if you stumble upon a social media post or our website, show it to somebody else and talk about it, sharing the stories of the participants. Like, this is how we really change hearts and minds.
I know I am looking forward to the upcoming documentary, and I know our listeners will be too. Can you tell us anything about the documentary and anything else that you want to share with us?
You'll hear from three different participants. You'll hear from them in their homes. You'll see one at work. You'll hear from myself, my colleagues, Maria and Mark, and you'll learn the ins and outs of why DBIP came to be, where we are now, and get some real in-depth knowledge and insights as to what it actually meant on a human level to three really, really special participants of the pilot.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode deepened your understanding of the Denver Basic Income Project and inspired you to see the upcoming documentary. We're at a critical inflection point as a nation, and projects like this show what's possible when we invest in people's dignity and well-being. If this conversation moved you, don't miss the DBIP's documentary, and please share this episode. This episode was brought to you by the Denver Basic Income Project and Elevated Denver. Editing, sound design, and music by Jesse Boynton. Recording and production by the Olympic Recording Studio. To learn more, visit elevateddenver.co. Sign up for our newsletter and reach out if you're interested in being part of the solution. It's going to take all of us to build an elevated Denver.